Good morning! This is Rob Paulson, a.k.a. Yakko Warner, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future. Egad, and good morning! This is Pinky, the real star of Pinky and the Brain. You are listening to Too Much Scrolling, which is exactly what Brain and I listen to. I'll see you in the future.
Nerf!
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for April 4th, 2023. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Easter Bunny.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Happy Easter, Easter Bunny.
Well, you know, I'm just getting ready for the big travel. Got the baskets full. And I've got the old bunny tail being worked on. It's going to be nice and fluffy.
In celebration of First Contact Day.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Happy First Contact Day to everybody who celebrates that this week. 40 years from now. 40 years from now, First Contact happens in the Star Trek universe.
Steve, they were talking to whales.
That is not First Contact. We've already contacted the whales. This is the Vulcans.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You, sir, you have been seeing some very interesting nostalgia pieces the last few weeks.
Steve, you know, what better way to follow up last week's movie where we discuss pinball and making it legal for everyone to be able to play to a movie about the Game Boy. And what made the Game Boy so special, Steve?
The Game Boy? You're going to go to the Game Boy version of Tetris? Is that the center of the Tetris movie?
That is.
Really?
That is part of this movie. This is a movie about the rights to Tetris and who is able to publish those throughout the world. And so for a person who is not familiar with the Soviet Union and how oppressive it was, and who a person who wasn't alive when the Berlin Wall came down, this could be a very eye-opening film. And I think that there is the issue is that in Russia, which was part of the Soviet Union, the designer of Tetris was there. I mean, that's where it happened.
Okay.
And so there was a gentleman who was buying the rights of games and being able to introduce those to other ones. In fact, our lead here, I think he, I can't remember what they called the game. I think it was called Go. Really, it was Othello. Have you ever played Othello, Steve?
That is a very similar game to the game Go, yes.
Yeah, so he was presenting that, but around the corner, he saw somebody had the game Tetris. And he said, now this is a great game. Not that Othello isn't a great game, but certainly Tetris is a game changer. And so it was like, who had the rights to distribute that around the world? And so he had to go to the Soviet Union to secure those rights. And it's a snake's nest of what is a computer, what's not a computer, who really had the rights, were they really paying for those rights? This is a great story about how bad the Soviet Union functioned and how the paranoia that it caused. And the guy
I'm going to make a perestroika joke right now. The paranoia of perestroika. Okay, got it.
Perestroika was afterwards, wasn't it?
Yes, it was afterwards. It's still funny in my head.
All right. So anyway, the Soviet Union was a group of people who basically just destroyed each other. When you are part of a system that doesn't recognize the rights of an individual, the guy who was inventing it didn't have the rights to sign it away. The Soviet Union had the rights to your work. And not only that, if they didn't feel you were working for the interest of the state, they could destroy your life. And that's what we learn about the guy who created it. is that they destroyed his parents' line, and they were getting ready to destroy his family's line. And this is a great film to revisit how dangerous this type of world is. I really, really like this film. I really like the characters on this. You get to follow the KGB. You get to the cruelty of the Soviets. You get we get international business negotiations. 70 out of 100. It's on Apple TV Plus. It is worthy of a membership there to watch this movie. This is a good, good movie.
I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. I was a big fan of Tetris in the 80s. I remember so vividly being that kid sitting in front of that monitor on an Apple computer. Oh my. And playing this game hours and hours on end. My mother would come in and watch me play this game. It's such a pretty perfect puzzle game that I enjoy the gaming. And I look forward to seeing the behind-the-scenes conversation.
So the other part about this, if you're an entrepreneur out there, you know how close it is between being successful and being just totally wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And this man, who is trying to secure the rights to Tetris worldwide distribution, he is always on that tightrope.
Mm.
And so you get to see the pressure from his side and how his family suffers. Because of that. And obviously, we're going to tie it up in a bow. We know the Game Boy came out. We know Tetris was chosen as the game to put on that. And we also know that the gentleman who was part of that group in the Soviet Union, who developed this game, he was able to come to the United States. He arrives in San Francisco. They create a company. We're not really getting this part, but they had a successful company.
Hmm.
Wonderful, wonderful movie. Good stuff. Steve, let's move on to a couple of things. You know, you might be a redneck, Steve. Let's talk about Jeff Foxworthy, The Good Old Days. It was released in 2022.
Yeah, Jeff Foxworthy, you probably remember as one of the stand-up comedians of the 1990s. 30 years ago, my friends, 30 years ago, Jeff Foxworthy was telling us that you might be a redneck, and his ability to share stories is on display in this 2022 stand-up routine. He's still got it. He is still a really interesting storyteller. A little bit of philosophy, but pretty much just telling stories of his engagements with his family and his friends. Jeff Foxworthy is that nice guy, that guy that you would invite to a party just to hear his stories. And that's what this comedy special is. A little bit of stories of the road with all of his friends on the blue collar comedy tour, a little bit of his viewpoint on things during the pandemic, and simple ideas from a voice of America.
So where would you watch this?
This is on Netflix. I still say Netflix is the center for stand-up comedy right now. I think that is the place you go when you want to get a flavor for comedy in 2020.
Now, didn't Jeff Foxworthy host a game show?
He did. Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader was his game show. And boy, was that fun, entertaining idea of education and trivia.
Jeff Foxworthy is a comedian that is certainly not going to be the more racy mm-hmm. of the, it is certainly more family oriented comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that's a very challenging place to be.
That is a thought that came through my head while I was watching this. He is not going to offend anybody with his stories. He's telling stories from a very personal point of view, telling stories about his wife and his kids and his mother. It's very not sanitized, because he doesn't need to sanitize. He's just telling stories.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
See, that's not the only thing you got to see this week. You also got to see an animated special.
Yeah, there's a movie that was nominated for Best Animated Feature in the Oscars that I hadn't seen, so I watched it this week on a plane, and it's Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. This is a adorable little animated film based on a short film, extended out into a feature film, just a metaphor for humanity, a metaphor for loss, a metaphor for change, a metaphor for the loneliness that we sometimes have in our lives. This adorable little talking shell that wears shoes and walks around this Airbnb tells us all about his perspective on how life is. This is not a groundbreaking film. This is not a philosophical film that people will be talking about 20 years from now. It's just a cute little idea of what if you were alone in an Airbnb and different strangers came in and you could tell them your story.
So obviously you watched this because Blue Velvet's Isabella Rossellini is in this.
Yes, Blue Velvet's Isabella Rossellini, of course.
Got to bring in the David Lynch in there for you, Steve.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Isabella Rossellini is wonderful. She plays an older shell who is there with Marcel, and I won't spoil what happens to her, but it's tragic. The voice actress who plays Marcel is Jenny Slate. She is a voice actress that has been on all sorts of different movies and TV shows for the last 20 years. She does such a wonderful job with this childish, innocent voice. She gives us so much character to this inanimate animated object, and I like this film very much. I think that everybody should spend the 90 minutes to watch this.
So with the holiday season upon us again, if you don't get out to see the Mario Brothers movie, then you've got this Marcel the Shell with Shoes available on Netflix.
You said Marcel. That is one of the jokes in this movie, is Marcel himself refers to himself as Marcel because, yes, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On is hard to say.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't even realize that. But, you know, what can I say? I was speaking French, Steve.
There you go. It's adorable. It is a little slow for younger audiences. I wouldn't say that kids would love this. This is PG rated. It is very much an idea of adult thinking, this silly little animated movie.
Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. I have been reading and reading and reading, Chip. I've got a long list of books to get through for the next few weeks. And one of the longest books that I've read is Fairy Tale by Stephen King. This was published in 2022.
Well, Steve, I'm always looking for a great ending. So let's tell us a little, let's give a little setup for this. To tell me that this is going to be a great, great story.
Stephen King is terrible at endings. He is world renowned as the worst ending author anywhere. And Fairy Tale does not disappoint. I have in all caps in our show notes, the ending of this book is terrible.
Now, Stephen King, kind of his process of the writing, though, kind of lends this, right? He basically sits down with a typewriter and just says, where is the story going to take me? And he follows that, which probably is a reason why his endings are not satisfying, because they weren't thought about mm-hmm. until he yeah. stops typing.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I can really criticize Stephen King in the 21st century is because he is the Stephen King, I don't think he has an editor that will take out any pieces of his storytelling, because he is who he is, very much like George Lucas with some of his writing. I think an editor could make this story much better.
Misa, don't think that's going to be helpful, Stephen.
Yeah. This is 607 pages. It is a tome of a story. It is a 24-hour long audiobook. I don't really think that the mass of fairy tale makes this story better.
So I think that may be something that Stephen King readers expect. Mm-hmm. They expect long, they expect good setups and stuff like that. And you're right. Maybe an editor could come in and take out a third of it,
mm-hmm.
and maybe ask Stephen to work on a proper ending. And it may be a stronger book, but you know, once you're a brand and you're selling, you know, the incentives are just not quite there.
Precisely.
And having someone, as you said, with enough credibility to say, hey, you should tighten this up, it's not like the person has to listen.
Correct. The idea of fairy tale, Stephen King was in the pandemic, and this story is a metaphor for the coronavirus pandemic. Early in the pandemic, King asked himself, what could you write that would make you happy? And he thought about all of those old fairy tales, the idea of a fairy tale, that the good versus evil and the good winning out at the end is something that's very comforting to a lot of us. And he came up with this idea of this fairy tale world. And the metaphor of the fairy tale really falls short for me here. I don't think that he got to that classic fairy tale metaphor.
Do they break out in song?
That would have made it better. I can honestly say that, I think that the people of this fairy tale world, if they had more singing, more songs, more, you know, metaphors like The Wizard of Oz, because this is very similar to The Wizard of Oz in a lot of ways, I think that that would have made this story better.
Could you read it to Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon?
That would have made it better too. The story of this is a regular high school kid named Charlie Reed. Get it? His name is Reed, and it's a story about stories. Yes, Stephen, we get it. Thank you. He's a great baseball and football player. He's a decent student, but he carries a heavy load. His mom was killed in a hit-and-run accident when he was 7, and grief drove his dad to alcohol. Charlie learned how to take care of himself and his dad. The setup is very much a Stephen King setup. It hits all of the beats that Stephen King readers expect: an alcoholic father, a car accident, a teenage boy wondering about his existence in the face of supernatural experiences. Evil is real, good wins out at the end. It's got everything Stephen King readers want.
So obviously this takes place in Maine.
It should. It absolutely should. For some reason that I have not been able to find in my research, for some reason, Stephen King decided to set this story in the Chicago Northwest suburbs, the place where I live. He name drops Elgin, Illinois, and Carpentersville, Illinois, for absolutely no good reason. I find no piece of that being truly Elgin or Carpentersville. He does not have any description that makes me think, oh, he visited this area. He knows where we're talking about. He gives us no street names, no business names. There's no reason why he chose Elgin and Carpentersville that I'm aware of.
Well, I mean, he could have dropped in Woodman's. They have a great alcohol section, Steve.
He could. He's not really pro alcohol in these stories, Chip. I don't know if you've read a lot of Stephen King stories, but alcoholic fathers are certainly metaphors in his storytelling for evil and bad decisions, and this story is no different.
Well, Woodman's also has a large cheese section, Steve. They're from Wisconsin, and they're in Carpentersville.
And a herring section. There's a sign for the herring section at Woodman's.
Well, why not?
I didn't love this Stephen King book. I honestly can say I have not loved Stephen King's writing since his car accident. When he had a terrible, debilitating car accident, his writing changed, his thinking changed. And I have not really loved any of his writing since that moment. This one basically for me is four separate stories. That first part that's set here in the Northwest suburbs is my favorite of the four stories. Then we get into the mysterious faraway land ruled by a malignant king whose people are suffering a graying that's removing body parts and causing great suffering. Stephen King is a horror writer. He is writing horrific things that are happening to these good people in the second piece. I get that. I'm okay with that. That's when the third story kicks in, where our protagonist is placed in a dungeon and forced to fight 31 other combatants to the death. That's where I really didn't like this writing. I don't like stories of torture. I don't like hearing about the details of torture happening to people. And Stephen King is writing that in the third part.
So this is like Scott Pilgrim meets Game of Thrones.
I would accept that as if you like Scott Pilgrim and you like Game of Thrones and you want to see what it would be like to combine those two, yes, I would say that this is something for you. The final part of the fairy tale is the final confrontation with the ruler of this land. And yeah, good wins over evil. Spoilers, everyone. Spoilers for a Stephen King novel that has a terrible ending. And it just ends. There's so much setup, hundreds and hundreds of pages of setup leading to a happy ending. You're welcome.
Well, Steve, you know, winter was coming, and not all stories can end, you know, satisfying everyone.
Yeah, a lot of people really like this story. If you are a big fan of Stephen King, I would say go ahead and read Fairy Tale. But on the other hand, if you get to the middle of this book, about 300 pages in, and you get to the torture piece and you go, this is not for me, I would say it'd be okay to punch out with this story. He's very good at characters. I know these characters. Charlie Reed, get it? His name is Reed, is very likable. The story makes sense. Some of the details of the third and fourth part are very shallow details. You can tell that Stephen King's style of writing is employed here, where he's just sitting down with a typewriter and plucking out these ideas from his mind. And the ideas at the beginning are much better than the ideas at the end.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, Steve.
There we go. That is one place we did not make it to in Colorado. On our trip to Colorado, I wanted to make it to the hotel from The Shining, and we didn't make it there because it's very hard to get to. I don't know if you know about The Shining, but it's very hard to get to. That's Fairy Tale by Stephen King, published in 2022.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's lots of things happening in the world. Let's talk about almost none of them. HBO Max is changing its name, Chip.
Yeah, they're going to change their name to Max, Steve.
So you can't name a radio station after a person. That doesn't make sense.
This brand that, I don't know, they've spent 50 years developing.
Uh-huh.
That was the first cable movie service that people paid extra for. You know, that they've messed around with HBO Now, HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're just going to drop the HBO name. Why?
Yeah. That's
why true. Would you give up your what your name is? Why isn't it just HBO?
Sure. It's a perfectly reasonable name. Home Box Office makes sense for this service. Max tells me almost nothing other than they've made another movie service called Cinemax. And that's all it tells me.
Well, that's crazy too. I mean, yeah. The idea of these name changes where we lose connection. Sony's streaming service is called Crackle,
mm-hmm.
which is an awful name.
Mm-hmm.
It should be Sony. But the alternative of that, we've just had a whole bunch of these streaming services that change their name. We have MGM Plus. That was a previous name of something else. I don't even know what it was a name for.
Right.
You know, Paramount Plus was CBS, wasn't it?
Correct. It's the Star Trek app.
Yeah. I don't know who is making these decisions. I don't know why they are putting a lot of effort into the names of the movie studios, which nobody identifies with anymore. It would be the equivalent of the Disney Plus app becoming, I don't know, 20th century app. Yeah. Why would you do that? But anyway, HBO Max will become Max, and no one will know what it is.
And only I will call it TV Son of TV's Frank. Everybody calls him Max. Banks are waging a digital wallet war with Apple. Those of you who are using Apple Pay, this is an interesting story.
This is from the Wall Street Journal. They had actually a video about this, and it shows that banks who really wanted to use digital wallets for security reasons at some point, they were very quick to sign up with Apple. Now, there's a whole bunch of other ones. There's Google, there's Samsung. Okay. But anyway, Apple has the majority of phone users right now in the United States. Let's make sure we're clear on that. And it has integrated into the phone in the sense that anytime you use this and you've connected your cards, you've basically created a unique number and it's secure. How lovely for something that wasn't secure before. So that is really nice. The challenge is now the banks are paying a little fee, and it seems like Apple's the only one that charged this little teeny fee. And that little teeny fee for all those transactions has added up to $786 million last year. Which for Apple, I'm sure, and their shareholders, they love that, Steve. But banks are saying, we're giving away some of our money. And they're trying to create their own app. So they're creating their own app. And because, you know, all these banks are competing with each other, they all got together to make their one app to avoid this. Because, you know, in the United States, competition among banks is only lip service.
Yes. Yeah, the idea of the microtransaction, these fractions of a penny, nobody's going to worry about a fraction of a penny, but those fractions of pennies, because there's so many users of Apple phones, therefore so many users of Apple Pay, they add up to big money.
Well, I mean, we saw it in Office Space.
That's Steve. The plot of Office Space, isn't it?
I wouldn't call it working there, Bob.
It is amazing to see that happen and to wonder about the future of how those transactions are going to happen.
Well, I want tech companies to compete with banks because I don't think banks compete real well with each other.
Okay.
And certainly we see a number of things going on right now that should make you recognize that this may not be the industry we think it is. Regardless, how good for Apple to create this, we'll see. Hopefully we get more innovations, and the expenses for the merchants and for the individual, our hope is they go down.
Right. We'll see. We will see. We'll stay tuned for that. Speaking of staying tuned, March Madness has ended and somebody won the championship. How about that?
Steve, that was just the perfect game last night. You remember when that team did that other thing and they made that shot? That was so incredible.
So as usual, whenever we report on sports, we're always talking in the past when something has happened. This recording, we don't know who's going to win the championship on Monday.
We saw it, and it was great, Steve. Hey, Steve, you know those brackets we put together at the beginning of the tournament? You know, where we had to pick the 64 teams or 68 teams?
Of course
I do. Of course. And there's not been a perfect bracket. But you know what? What are the chances of getting a perfect bracket, Steve?
I would say that there would be pretty good chances. You said 64 teams, so it seems to be pretty simple to choose 64 victors, right?
Well, you know, it's 1 in 9.2 quintillion, Steve. That sounds like it's a pretty good odds. Maybe we should play the lottery, too.
1 in 9.2 quintillion is not good odds, my friend. You should not be trying to achieve that goal.
Now, if you got a little bit of basketball knowledge of college basketball, you know, we break it down to One in 120 billion.
That's better if you know a
I
little
mean,
bit.
significantly better, Steve.
Okay.
In fact, you should probably fill out two.
Just to make sure, that would increase the odds by double, right?
So we wanted to look up, has anybody ever put together a perfect bracket? And the answer is no.
Hmm.
So who has been the best so far? And it was in 2019, Steve. So we're talking 4 years ago. Greg Nigel from Columbus, Ohio, he correctly picked 49 of the games.
Okay.
49 of the games. He got to the Sweet 16. He did what everyone else does. He watched his bracket blow up.
This is a lot of fun, right? Everybody fills out these brackets and you get the joy of the excitement of your team on your bracket being successful.
I think what works so well with it is we get schools that are not necessarily powerhouses playing schools that have put a tremendous amount of effort into their basketball programs. So we get North Carolina, we get Duke, we get Kansas, we get Kentucky, we get UCLA, we get Connecticut, teams that have history of performing incredibly well. And this year, what did we have? We had Florida Atlantic make it to the Final Four, which is a big university, but this was their first trip to the NCAA tournament.
Hmm.
We got Miami, which basically abandoned their basketball program in the 70s, revived it in the 1980s, and has never had a Final Four experience, but they got it this year.
Hmm.
We get San Diego State, who was also part of the Final Four, for the first time, who during COVID, there was a good chance they were going to win the tournament. So they had this incredible run, and then COVID shut down basketball, and they were unable to play the tournament. So this is just a blast to watch the David and Goliath moments, and you can't pick who's going to win. So you eventually, you're there, you're live or watching on television. You pick whatever team is the underdog and you watch them try to fight it out and win. How exciting.
And a lot of people are watching the women's NCAA March Madness tournament this year.
Well, that was something that a lot of effort had been put into. Last year, the WNBA, Adam Slive is in charge of the NBA. He said, listen, where are the fans? We've put this a tremendous amount of effort in putting out this product. It's a good product. Why aren't people showing up to these games? And he's basically calling out fans who said, you wanted this. We gave it to you. Where are you? ESPN, which is has the broadcast rights to the Women's Final Four, has put a lot of effort into reporting on women's basketball, college basketball. And that has certainly raised the profile of this. Because if you're in the middle of a broadcast and you get the best games with the best players playing, they do become of interest. And this year's Women's Final Four was incredible. In fact, Iowa took on South Carolina, who was undefeated at the time. And Iowa has this superstar player, and South Carolina was this juggernaut who marched through the season, didn't lose. Well, Iowa beat them, and they got to play for the championship. So once again, we get a lot of fun things end up happening. And so Iowa and LSU played. I'm sure they had a great game. In fact, we were reporting it. Yes, they had the perfect game, and those people did a great job doing this and that. And we also had it's showing up on the number of people who are viewing these games.
Mm-hmm. The women's Elite Eight round drew 2.2 million average viewers, the most on record for ESPN, and a 43% higher rating than last year.
Now, I'm going from memory, but I want to say the Final Four, the Iowa-South Carolina game, may have had higher viewership than any NBA game that's being broadcast this year.
Broadcast TV is definitely changing. The amount of live events that are being viewed versus the number of, you know, dramas that are being viewed, the numbers are so low. It's amazing to see we're finally finding a place for sports.
Well, we're not finally finding it. It's the only thing that's bringing in revenue.
Agreed.
And in fact, it's sad. The sad part about the last few minutes of a game is it's almost all ads. It just stops every few seconds, and we get another set of ads. I really wish they would do something about that. Major League Baseball started last week, and one of the new rules they brought in was a clock. The pitcher only has, 30 seconds. I can't remember what it was, to be able to get a pitch off. Well, it has already reduced the time for a game by 30 minutes. I'm throwing that out there. And so this has been very good for baseball. Well, basketball and football really need to work on this. We need to find a model that they get the revenue that they want. But, geez, there's 2 minutes left in the game. It shouldn't take 30 minutes to have it completed. It ruins the flow of the game. We need to have the games roll on. Once again, I don't care if they run ads on the side or something of that nature. We need to do maybe what soccer's doing, you know, run banners or something.
Okay.
Because it's just ruining the flow of that game. To go off to see that advertisement, to see that advertisement that we have, seen 1,000 times anyway.
Got it. There's lots of things happening this week. The calendar is full. It's election day today. Go out and vote for all of those interesting local things that are happening. It's First Contact Day tomorrow. 40 years from now, first contact will happen with the first alien race, according to Star Trek. Passover is on Wednesday. Happy Passover to everyone who celebrates. Good Friday follows with Easter on Sunday.
And Steve, but what if you were in London? What if you were speaking a British accent like all the bad guys in Star Wars?
Oh, if only I was in London right now, Chip. Star Wars Celebration London is happening this weekend. We had so much fun at Star Wars Celebration here in Chicago. That's so many great memories, meeting so many great people. Being in London to do that, with, you know, where Star Wars was filmed, a lot of it was from British actors. That's why all the bad guys have that accent. It would be amazing this weekend.
Well, maybe we're in all the wrong places, Steve.
Ewok it off. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm the Easter Bunny.
Fuck, fuck. We'll see you in the future.
I'm the Easter Bunny.
Bok, bok.
No kids will understand what that means. We're speaking to a demographic, Steve.
There's a certain audience for this show, my friend.